Tom Woods Show, episode 1844.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I've had a lot of people say that I've been keeping them sane with my commentary through my email newsletter about what's really going on with the virus. Well, if you want to know the people who keep me sane and the resources I use to find out the stuff I find out, well, I made you a list of those resources, and you can grab it over at tomwoods.com/corona. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. In a lot of what we say about what's been going on with lockdowns and COVID and all that, a lot of it's very abstract, graphs and charts and statistics, but we also need to talk to actual people who are enduring it and who are feeling it in a particularly unique way. And that includes a lot of business owners, including our guests today, Patrick and Jessica Harold, who are the owners of Woodchips Barbecue in Michigan. You can find their website, or it's woodchipsbbq.com, on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1844. And they stood up to the lockdowners, and I know that they read my newsletter and stuff, and so I invited them on to share their story with you. And so that's what we're about to do right now. So let me get right into the questions. All right, I think what I'd like to do is just have you tell the basic story of what happened. You guys are in Michigan?
Correct.
Okay, so Michigan is like California, notorious throughout the country for the harshness of its lockdown. And it seems like even though you can find a minority of folks who are not fans of Whitmer, that a lot of people think, well, she's just doing her best, try to keep everybody safe. That must be tough to fight against. But anyway, what's the timetable involved here? At what point did you say, we're not doing this? I mean, just give me the fill in the blanks here.
Sure. So we had the first lockdown announced in early March. That was supposed to be the 15 days to flatten the curve, which ended up extending out to 85 days. I think we were one of the longest, not the longest in the nation, with the indoor dining ban. And we did follow the rules for that one. We did close down. We did the carry out only, try to get inventive and, you know, basically try to find a way to survive as we were, us and our whole industry was being decimated. Made it through to the summer. You know, we did survive and were able to do decently well with our 50% capacity, which is what we were kept at for, I think, pretty much the entire summer. And then coming around to November, then talk of cases rising again. And then soon on November 15th, Governor Whitmer made the announcement that she would be closing indoor dining again, this time as the pause that was supposed to last for 3 weeks. So at that point, I started having my employees and team reach out to me, and they were really concerned heading into the holidays, you know, having still dealt with the effects of many of them being laid off from our previous stretch, that they didn't know what was going to happen. And so we had to come up with a solution. So I went to my leadership, I presented them with options, you know, close down like we did last time, kick our team to the curb and try to take care of as many as we can, or try to stay open, you know, implement as many other safety recommendations above and beyond anything they've said possible, be extremely transparent with it, proactively reach out to all local leadership, law enforcement, anybody who'd be willing to talk to us so they understand what we're doing and why we're doing it, and then to make the decision to, with eyes wide open, defy the government orders.
So what does that look like? That means you just continue as before and wait to see if the health department or the police show up?
Yes, basically. So I met with both the county sheriff, who was actually supportive of what we were doing and said he would not be talking with us at all other than to pat us on the back. And then the local police chief, who I'd had a positive relationship with, I'd served on a downtown district board with him, let him know what was going on. He informed me what the process would be. He said he doesn't enforce those rules, but when he gets complaints, he'll write up a complaint and he'll forward it to the health department. So we knew, at least as from a law enforcement perspective, kind of what to expect. But from the government agencies, the executive departments, that was still kind of the wild card.
Okay. So what has happened since then? Has anything bad happened to you guys? Have you had any kind of confrontation with anybody?
Oh, sure. we had the local police, they received their complaints and they came through and handed us a one-page slip saying that they'd received a complaint and they'd forwarded to the health department along with copies of the executive order, or the MDHHS order at this point, since the executive orders had actually been deemed illegal under a Michigan Supreme Court ruling back in October, but were quickly replaced by Michigan Department of Health and Human Services orders almost word for word verbatim. So we had a visit from the health inspector showed up first, escorted by a state police officer to ask us if they would close down. And I said, yeah, if you can give me any solutions where my people are taken care of, I'll happily have that conversation. They took that as refusal to close down. Shortly after that, they issued us a $1,000 fine with the threat of fining us up to $1,000 per day that we were open. Not too long after that, we were visited by Michigan Liquor Control, who came and again asked us to close down, told us we would get our due process and be able to work through everything without any revocations or emergency suspensions. Turned out that wasn't true because they showed up to emergency suspend our liquor license shortly after that. I think that was around early December. So they just showed up, physically took our liquor license, the magical piece of paper that we keep in our building that lets us legally sell booze to people. And we continued to operate from that point on, only selling non-alcoholic beverages. Went from there, we started to navigate the hearing system because we wanted to appeal everything. But when you're dealing with the government, especially executive departments, the rule book is giant. They wrote all the rules and they can change them on a whim. So there's no real strong legal argument we had to make in that court because it's not like a circuit court. We can't bring constitutional arguments there. It's only based off, we're dealing with an administrative law judge and he's just there to administer that specific law. So our hands were kind of tied, but we were able to go through a Zoom trial hearing, make our case passionately, let them know what we were doing and why, along with our stance as acting as a nonprofit for that 3-week pause. We were very busy and we managed that very well, but all profits there ended up becoming bonus for my teammates, or we turned it into community efforts, feeding those in need, taking care of restaurant industry people that were laid off. We've documented all through our social media. We're well over $10,000 at this point since the start of the pause that we've been able to give back to the community and a lot more in the mix.
Oh, at the hearing, Pat was really able to demonstrate that, you know, this is something that we're doing for all the right reasons. And while the constitutional argument definitely holds water with us, unfortunately, it doesn't with that court. So we were able to, at that point, sort of convince the judge that, you know, we were acting out of, you know, the kindness of our hearts, really looking at our teammates, looking at our community and the needs. And from there, you know, as opposed to a 60-day suspension, they actually gave us a 45-day suspension. So that actually made us feel like there was some leniency in the process. But at the same time, you're seeing, you know, the full display of, you know, government overreach.
Sure. They even pushed for a 90-day suspension, actually, because he saw what we were doing and said, even, quote, you know, they're putting their money where their mouth is, putting the safety precautions in place, doing their best to take care of it. You know, more or less, he was like, you know, I have to do this, but you guys are doing the best you can with it. So we had one of the lightest suspensions of the, I think, 40 plus different restaurants to this point that have had their liquor license suspended.
But what's going on? Maybe I missed it with the potential $1,000 a day.
So that was the other thing. So, right. So you've got liquor control on one side, having jurisdiction that, you know, quite frankly, surprised me.
Which real quick, if we should clarify. So the violation of liquor law that we were violating was committing an illegal act on premise. The illegal act on premise was violating the MDHHS orders. So not that we were actually breaking a law, but each executive department in Michigan basically has the ability to enforce any other executive department's rules that they administer. So we are put in like a form of civil double jeopardy here, where it's the same act, but we're getting on both ends from liquor control and then dealing with MDHHS.
So MDHHS comes to us, and of course they give us, you know, the $1,000 fine and asking us to close down. And of course we said no. And a few weeks later, we actually got a letter in the mail saying that there were 4 more violations. So in total now we've received $5,000 worth of fines, basically, for not shutting down.
Are you just not going to pay them? I mean, do you have a strategy here, or is there just no choice?
Yeah, so we've filed for an appeal hearing, and they scheduled a date with us. We had a pre-trial hearing, and then we got to the point where we had to submit our evidence and our witness list. Now, within that witness list included both the former director of the MDHHS, who resigned very abruptly not that long ago.
I think it was like 2 days after the pause was officially lifted. After how many days?
It had been a while, but I think we did 75 days with this pause. Either way, Michigan's been the most locked-down restaurant when it comes to dine-in restaurants, I believe, of any of the states. But he resigned, and then as well as his replacement, because it explicitly said in there, we were allowed to subpoena anybody that worked within the department to testify in our case. So we did that as well as some of our evidence, which the main point we were trying to prove is they label us as an imminent threat. We were there to show that there is no data that supports that we're actually an imminent threat. but that we can show that other situations, the unintended consequences of their action, create situations which do meet their definition of imminent threat. So we had our list of evidence, which we had to submit. We had this list of people we wanted to subpoena to testify. Once the attorney general got a look at that, they were not happy at all. So this is when some of the shady antics, it seems like, started to step up. They filed a motion for summary judgment, an 85-page motion, when that's definitely a little bit overkill for a $1,000 civil infraction. Because this isn't even all 5,000 being adjudicated at this point. This is one single $1,000 charge. And so they wanted that to just be ruled guilty without us getting a chance to say anything. And then before we even had a chance to respond to that, after they saw our witness list, they had a conversation with the judge ex parte, not including us, which at this point, our lawyer should have been included. And they pushed for adjournment, which was granted to them. So as of right now, we stand in some sort of legal limbo where they don't really know what to do with us. They don't want to let us off the hook, but we also think they're very scared of us possibly having a public forum to make our case and show that we have a lot of science and data on our sides, that we're not a huge risk to our customers and our community.
Well, let me ask you about the concern I would have in your shoes, or an additional one. Obviously, we're just surrounded by people who think this is all super, and they just think you better just have your life ruined and be, you know, in the poorhouse, and that's necessary to keep them safe somehow. And they want to snitch on people like you. Mm-hmm. And that can also take the form of just posting one-star reviews. And one of those can hurt you. So how do you cope with that?
So, you know, to your point, there were definitely some detractors. We had some negative comments. We had, you know, a few people that just were obsessed, right? They were increasing our reach on all of the social media because they kept commenting and they were harassing other people. But we're talking about a handful of people while we had thousands of people in support. So we, you know, were fueled with so much positivity from those in the community that were grateful. You know, it's not just about, you know, standing up to the government. There are people who suffered serious mental health issues during the first lockdown. For me personally, I also did. So it was so nice to read the messages from people who are like, thank you for keeping me normal. Thank you for giving me a space to connect with humans, because at the end of the day, we still are human. And so while we definitely got some inhumane comments from really just a select few, and yes, they did threaten to call and they did call the authorities, we were very blessed to have an incredible community. And again, it's not just those people who are patriots, it's those people who really suffered consequences during the first lockdown and recognized that there's a better or a different way to do this. And those were the people that lent their support and really fueled us with all of that positivity during those sort of darker comments, if you will. But overall, we were very blessed to receive lots of love from the community.
Now, see, that's really encouraging. And that might be encouraging to some business owners listening to us right now, that if even in Michigan, where the lockdown has been very harsh, but yet the public has been favorable enough to the governor that she was seriously considered, I think, as a possible vice presidential candidate, mm-hmm. that even in that scenario, you could still get that kind of support from, I don't know if it's a silent majority, but it's a silent something. That is very encouraging. That is something.
Correct.
It is. And we also want to say, you know, a big part of our message is we lead with understanding. You know, on a lot of the videos I put out there, I'm like, look, I understand that some of you aren't going to agree with me. I 100% get that. But please just understand what we're doing and why we're doing it, why we think it's the best route for us. And at the end of the day, if I can't convince you to change your mind, that's okay. But if we can start with this understanding, maybe that can provide a platform for us to be able to have real conversations that seem to be completely absent from the political and the mass media hemispheres.
Hey, folks, I want to take a quick minute for an important message about something that can help you spiritually and yet eminently practically, and can enrich your life tremendously. So what could I be talking about? Well, of course, Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community that gives you the opportunity to expand your knowledge and abilities in some passion you already pursue, or to expand your horizons into worlds you've never inhabited before. Not to mention, the skills you learn can form the basis of a side hustle or even your own business. We're talking classes in everything from illustration and graphic design and photography to fine art, music and music production, film and video, marketing, entrepreneurship, web development, you name it. Lately, I've been very interested in productivity, not because I'm trying to do 10 times the work, but because I want to spend more time with kiddos. So I took an extremely practical, very step-by-step class on Skillshare by Thomas Frank called Productivity Masterclass, Create a Custom System That Works. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/woods and get a free trial of premium membership. That's a free trial of premium membership at skillshare.com/woods. So you have two locations. Where are they? What are they close to for those of us who don't know Michigan?
So we have Woodchips Barbecue is in Lapeer, Michigan. That's about an hour north of Detroit, or about 20 minutes east of Flint, since everybody knows Flint now. We opened that in 2014, and that's our full-service dine-in, has a liquor license. That's one we've been referring to. We do have another location called Woodchips Express that we actually opened just a couple weeks before the first lockdown, and that's in Oxford, Michigan, which is about 20 minutes south of Lapeer, a little bit closer to Detroit. We also own together, Jess and I, a cookie shop called Cookies and Cream, and that's in downtown Lapeer, right across the street from Woodchips Barbecue as well.
And that one opened only 6 months before the lockdown. So
oh my gosh, you people and your timing.
Yeah, right, exactly.
We're still standing.
Well, that's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear it. Now, I could imagine some people who work for you might say, well, I don't know if I feel safe coming back into work. You didn't have any of that?
Well, sure, you know, I didn't want to force this on anybody. Like I said, I went to my leadership. They made the choice. And once they made the choice to move forward, the next thing we did was call each employee down one by one, let them know the scenario, let them know that they had a choice in front of them, that you could continue to stay with us. And this is how it could play out, that there is no, you're not going to get risk of getting in trouble. But I also know that you have your life to live and you have relationships and people may or may not judge you for being a part of what we're doing here. We had about 28 on staff. Of them, only two selected to take a voluntary layoff. And both of those two supported us. One has already returned. The other one has reservations until the mask requirement is lifted.
Because she doesn't want to work in a kitchen in a mask because, Tom, as you can imagine, wearing a mask in a very hot space is very oppressive. Oh. And our kitchen happens to be a little bit tiny. And so just from that perspective, it has nothing to do with, you know, how she feels about what we're doing. It's really just a physical impediment for her to work.
Yeah, that's right.
And our team support has only grown since then, especially once they saw that we were putting our money where our mouth is. We kept them employed while their friends that worked at other restaurants were struggling. They saw all the good we were able to do in the community, whether it was the Thanksgiving meals, the Christmas meals, our Christmas dinner, the $1,000 checks we were writing to local charities that were taking care of those who've been suffering the unintended consequences of lockdowns. So they're really proud to be a part of our team. And I'm proud to have them because I'm only here because of them. They are my family.
Well, that's tremendous. I think these are people who, by and large, probably don't subscribe to the Tom Woods newsletter. So they don't know exactly where Fauci has misstepped here and there, but they have a good gut instinct about what makes sense and what doesn't. And after we've lived through this for however many months, I think we've realized that it's obviously manageable if you just assess your own level of risk and act accordingly. So I think there probably are. You know, in the same way that there are probably, I don't know how to estimate the percentage, but a good chunk of people who are just going to dig in their heels and be unreasonable up to the last minute. But there's got to be it's just got to be 40% of America that is just prepared to be sort of normal. There just has to be, it seems to me.
Yeah, I think, and that's been reflected even here locally in Michigan polls, where I know the governor started off with extremely high approval ratings, and that has continue to slip. Right now, I read recently in the Detroit News or Free Press an article that her reelection was far from a sure thing. And there were some numbers in there that were really kind of raising some flags that she was vulnerable. And I think you're going to continue to see that as, you know, more and more of them saying they have science on their side, but they won't share the science with us. And then, you know, we just had to experience. So they let us finally, well, they let all the other restaurants, we were still open, but they let the other restaurants come back to 25% capacity for dine-in with a 10 p.m. curfew. And she says this is all tied to data, but our positivity rate is down to like one of the lowest in the nation. And worse than that, they made this change saying, okay, for the next 2 weeks, we're going to do 25% dining, then we'll revisit it. 3 days later, because she was facing pressure to allow high school sports to start up again, she did another ruling saying, okay, high school sports are okay. And then quietly slipped in, by the way, we're going to keep 25% dining and 10 p.m. curfew through the end of March. Slipped in so well that media didn't even pick up on this until weeks later. And now everybody's just kind of discovered this. And we're like, well, what is this based off of? Because just to the south of us, Ohio, where we've taken trips to Toledo less than an hour away, they've been open the entire time and they just had their curfew completely lifted. So we're just trying to understand, if you're saying it's about the science, share the science with us. If you're saying we're an imminent threat, show me I'm an imminent threat. I'm a food safety expert. I want to do what I can to take care of my people. But at some point, you know, I'm going to reject my consent to be governed if you're going to govern me based off this fiat. And I want everybody to think long and hard, what's the best move for them to take? I'm not here to encourage anybody or discourage anybody to do anything except to ask questions and try to have a conversation so that we can get to the best solutions for everybody.
And honestly, are there really people out there? I mean, I get that we can have a discussion about social distancing or whatever, but is there really anybody who thinks curfews are doing any good? You know, California was lousy with curfews and then suddenly everything blew up over there. Seems to me the only effect of a curfew, if you're going to say, okay, you have to have all your business done by X o'clock, okay, so that means that in the hours that are now available to me, I'll crowd in with everybody else trying to crowd in to get everything done by 10.
Sure.
I thought the idea was to spread things out. The thing makes no sense. Here I am trying to find some rational thread running through it.
Yes, and you know, obviously you're totally right about that. It doesn't make sense, especially pointing out that people will pack in to fill up their evenings early in the evening so that we're all together at the same time. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I think what I've heard is that, you know, after 10 p.m., we can't make good decisions. So literally we're being told by our government that we're not responsible adults. And, you know, it's quite frankly very insulting.
By the way, I'm at your website, which is woodchipsbbq.com. And whoever took that picture deserves a raise. I mean, that has to be the most mouthwatering barbecue picture I've ever seen. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, come for the freedom, stay for the amazing barbecue.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I wish I got to Michigan much at all. Are you anywhere near, I'm sorry, I know so little about Michigan. Are you anywhere near Hillsdale College?
Oh, that's further south from us.
It's a few hours away, I think two hours or so.
Okay. All right,
because we know about Hillsdale.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because my old friend Brad Berzer, who comes on the show every now and then, is a professor there, and we've known each other forever, and we've never met in person. And we were supposed to meet on the Contra Cruise last year, and Brad all of a sudden couldn't come for an extremely good reason. And then there was a concert we were going to go together to in Canada, and I couldn't go to that. So we keep not being able to do it. I'd love to meet at your barbecue place. That's why I was thinking. I'll fly to Michigan, meet Brad, and we'll have some barbecue. So we'll see. We'll see.
That would be amazing. We would love to have you.
If we took a road trip, we wouldn't stop talking the whole time. So it wouldn't be that we'd be bored making the drive up there. That's not a problem.
Just throw the recorder on. You got yourself a traveling
and bucket. I got myself a week's worth of episodes. That's right.
You know what? I have the perfect solution for you.
Okay.
You fly into the Detroit airport. He's going to come pick you up. And then you guys will drive up to Lapeer. And that will make your drive a little bit shorter because you're going to have to get picked up from the airport anyway. And
oh,
therefore,
that's smart.
Yeah, there you go.
We've got an Airbnb above the restaurant too. So if you want to hang out.
All right. You know, by the way, you think I'm joking, but I would consider this. I would, because I'd love to meet Brad. I'd love to come see you guys. I just wish the state was a little more open so there'd be more for me to do while I'm there.
We understand.
Well, we got 25% of awesome.
I mean, I can have at least two meals a day at your place, but then I do have other things I need to do.
Well, we got cookies too, don't forget.
Oh,
that is a good point. That's a good point. So what does the future hold?
Well, so I mean, we're still in kind of this legal limbo. As we're figuring out what the state's going to do with us, we assume on some level they have to respond to some sort of timeline. If not, we'll kind of pressure them to tell us where we stand. But you know, at this point, we view it as we've succeeded in our mission. We took care of our team. We're pushing forward. You know, we still have lots of popular support. We're still doing amazing things in the community. In fact, Thursday of this week, we're launching our first community dinner where we're putting on a meal to feed up to 200, 250 people in the community that just need a fresh scratch made meal or just need to reconnect with people, partner with a local community center as well as a local food bank. So that's just our mission now, is trying to bring people together. I've always wanted to empower people to live better lives, my employees, promote entrepreneurship. So this is just kind of a natural evolution, and we're going to keep pushing it forward. And we're working on expansion projects with Woodchips to double our size, working on putting together some sort of concert, outdoor, maybe mini Freedom Festival this summer with some live music acts. And, you know, we just want to show that, well, if people aren't going to provide us the stuff that we think we need and deserve in this world, then we're going to do our best to provide it ourselves.
Yeah, that is just great.
And beyond that, you know, Tom, I shared the podcast that Pat and I put out. Basically, we just want people to know the story. We want people to understand the unintended consequences. We want people to understand the humanity behind our decisions. And we also kind of want to shed light on the legal system and what's happening up here, because, you know, to not have our time in court, to not have our day in court, to, you know, have our words heard and understood, it's really important for everybody out there to understand, you know, what business owners have gone through and what they continue to go through behind the scenes, just trying to, you know, take care of the family that they've created within the businesses, their own personal families, and their lives.
I want to ask you before you go something that has nothing to do with what you're going through right now, nothing to do with libertarianism or anything. It's just something I'm curious about restaurants. I've always wondered, because I think because you're dealing with perishable stuff, it's different from, let's say, running a bookstore. I can keep those books on the shelves until the pages turn yellow pretty much, but they're still going to be fresh. But with the restaurant, I have to balance something here. I have to make sure I have enough food so that if, you know, the whole Little League team shows up, I can make a profit off them. But on the other hand, not so much that it spoils and I have to throw it away and I lose a huge amount of money. I have absolutely no idea how you balance that, especially given that I'm sure day to day there isn't a wild variation in the amount of people coming in, but sometimes there has to be. Can you give me any insight about that? I've always wanted to know.
Sure. Well, barbecue is especially challenging since most of our products take, you know, the better part of a day to prepare in the smoker. So you really have to make your best guess and there's no real adjustment once you go in with it. I'm really good at projecting. You know, you create spreadsheets that you calculate usages per thousands of dollars for every one of your items. So you put in your projected dollar amounts and that's going to create all your prep sheets for you, build your system so that you're doing your best guess. That being said, we're a scratch-made restaurant, we're barbecue, sometimes we do run out of stuff. But that is always an ongoing challenge. Some days, especially recently with all the government orders changing things, you know, usually I'm good at making projections, but with this, it's like throwing a dart blindfolded at a moving target. So we definitely had some days where we had excess product, and that's where we turn to our charitable partners. We do a every other week donation in Oxford, Neighbors Feeding Neighbors. We help them feed 200 to 250 people. And then we also created, while we were locked down, a new concept that we have within our restaurant called the Egg Roll Factory. So this has been wildly popular. So we take our smoked meats, if we don't sell them at the end of the day, we cool them, combine them with some complimentary flavors, make some scratch-made dipping sauce, and roll them up in wontons and make egg rolls. So anytime you come, we have four or five different egg rolls available. We've turned that into a pop-up concept. We've done it at breweries, almost like a food truck style thing. And it's been really popular. And it's one of the things that helped us keep going during the really early dark days of the first lockdown.
We had to get really creative.
Yes.
Well, all I can say is you guys sound fantastic. It just both as restaurateurs and as human beings. So I wish you continued success, and I, you know, let's hope we get to the other side of this sooner rather than later. But you really are an example in numerous ways to others and to a lot of business folks listening in today. So the website again is Wood Chips Barbecue. So that's woodchipsbbq.com, and I'll link to it on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1844. Do you have any final words you want to share before we wrap up?
Well, we have The Restaurant Revolution is our podcast that we've just put out the first episode for, where we're detailing our story, and we'll continue to release episodes with that. So we basically bring it up to real time. So again, people can get the full perspective of who we are, what we did, and why we did it. And then most importantly, showing not just transparency on our end, but transparency with our interactions with the government. Because we want people to know that even if you support this, there should be some basic rules of operation that we can all agree on. Beyond that, you know, my message is just one of positivity and love. You know, you don't have to own a restaurant and give $1,000 checks to make a difference in this world. Find ways that you can contribute to what you believe in. Take care of those around you. Inspire others. Don't force your views on them. And just know that, you know, I'm the result of a brush fire of liberty that Ron Paul set in 2007. So never know who you're going to influence and where that can go.
I just love to hear that. I'm sure he would be pleased to hear it also. Well, again, thanks very much to you both.
Thank you so much, Tom. We're such big fans. Your email is incredible. So for all the listeners who haven't signed up, I would highly suggest getting on your newsletter feed. It is so incredible. And
Thank you very much.
It's true.
All right. I appreciate it. I hope I can. I would just love to just walk in there one day. That would just be so great.
We'd love it. We'll welcome you with open arms.
Yeah, sure will.
All right. Well, thanks. And by the way, if I show up and you say, you know, doggone it, I really am good at calculating, but today I'm out of everything. I'm just turning around.
We'll figure it out for you. We're restaurants, you deal with challenges every day. I'm a crafty guy. Don't you worry, Tom.
I have no doubt. All right. Thanks again.
Thanks, you. Tom. Hope to chat again. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. Now, tomorrow we've got the wonderful, I absolutely love comedian Andrew Heaton, who's going to join us to talk about the $15 minimum wage controversy. We've hit on this here and there in the past, but it's been quite a while, and we're going to devote an episode to it tomorrow. So make sure you subscribe at tomwoods.com/apple, and I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.